In my address this morning, I would like to celebrate, however briefly, the religious and spiritual beliefs of two wonderful human beings, and then offer some reflection on the diversities and complexities of spiritual exploring. But first, let us consider its title. To be always relevant, you have to say things which are eternal. The words are a quote from a French philosopher and mystic, and I first came across them 3 years ago in an opinion piece by the US Anglican priest Tish Warren. Her article bemoans the disconnection between today's often fractious, indeed joyless, public discourse and the need for longer-term, more nuanced understanding. There is a tension between the immediate gratification of social media culture and the long-term pursuit of wisdom. Constant outrage and quick reactions create anxiety and fatigue. We are hooked on spectacle and immediacy. But Warren contends that seeking to understand rather than just denounce requires patience and the fine distinction essential for true discernment. I would add that we are now living in the so-called attention economy, where our attention is commodified and monetized by tech companies seeking to maximize advertising and selling opportunity. Capturing consumer time and engagement becomes the primary economic driver. This attention economy generates more and more information, but less and less meaning. Thus, in our digital age, there is arguably a need to manage our attention. Knowing when to disengage from daily cultural warring and focus instead on things of substance. I cite the concluding lines of Tish Warren's article. What our society and our souls need most is not the roaring noise of trending topics or fleeting debates. We need the slow wisdom of eternal things that, though always relevant, are often overlooked, yet quietly seed the world with redemption. For myself, the title of the address lends support to the belief that to lead an authentic, worthwhile, and decent life, we must interrogate the eternal, the transcendent, the divine, whatever you consider these to be. What is trivial and ephemeral may well entertain and relax us. However, a true appreciation of relevance and purpose requires an ongoing spiritual engagement. I have deep affection for the theater of the great American playwright Eugene O'Neill. Here was a man who understood profoundly the human soul. His work is deeply preoccupied with what he terms the eternal verities, the fundamental, unchanging truths of human existence. He urges us to shape our lives around these verities and be careful of pipe dreams, those illusions we adopt to mask the often harsh reality of existence. To be always relevant, you have to say things which are eternal. These are the words of Simone Weil, a French philosopher, mystic, and political activist. Simone Weil, spelt W-E-I-L, was born in Paris in 1909 of a Jewish family. She was, by times, a teacher, a laborer, a factory worker, a trade unionist, and a Marxist. She participated, however modestly, in the Spanish Civil War and the French Resistance. Despite being raised an agnostic, Vey became increasingly religious and inclined towards mysticism as her life progressed. Despite a very short time on this earth, a mere 34 years, she had a very full life during which she wrote prodigiously. Albert Camus called Vey the only great spirit of our time. Today, her ideas on religion, spirituality, and politics remain widely influential. One of Vey's most important books is entitled Waiting for God, a collection of her personal letters and essays compiled and published in 1950, a few years after her death. The essays explore themes of love, grace, attention, beauty, suffering, and religious practice, and assert that the love of God must include love for others and for the world. Profound and challenging, Waiting for God is viewed as a seminal text for those drawn to mysticism, philosophy, and the complexities of faith. For Vey, the notion of attention is crucial. Attention consists of suspending or emptying one's thoughts such that one is ready to receive and to embrace the object to which one turns one's gaze, be that object a friend, a neighbor, a stranger, or ultimately God. Vey connects attention directly to the moral and spiritual life. It is the foundation of love, justice, and compassion. It is the essence of the way we appreciate beauty. This attention is not some passive gaze, but an active ethical engagement involving the suppression of self so that the reality of the other person can be truly gleaned. The soul must empty itself of all its contents in order to receive into itself the being it is looking at, just as they are in all their truth. Vey concludes, attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Not surprisingly, Simone Vey, in her person and in her beliefs, has influenced many, from philosophers to poets, from priests to politicians, and from writers to feminists. The novelist and philosopher Iris Murdoch is one who has recognized this inspiration in developing her own spiritual ideas and worldview. Iris Murdoch was born in Phibsborough, Dublin, in 1919 to Irish Protestant parents who moved to London shortly after her birth. Educated at Cambridge University, she taught philosophy at Oxford and worked during the late Second World War years with the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration, then known as UNRWA. She went on to write some 24 novels, additionally works of philosophy, as well as poetry and drama. Her novels address themes of good and evil, sexual relationships, morality, and the power of the unconscious. She was married for 43 years until her death in 1999, in her 80th year, to the literary critic and author John Bailey. The marriage had an unconventional side in that during it, Murdoch enjoyed multiple affairs with both men and women. As a philosopher, Murdoch's best-known work is The Sovereignty of Good, published in 1970. Her philosophic work speaks to moral realism and to the importance of the virtues. It gives force to the reality of good, often spelled with a capital G, and to a sense of a moral life as a pilgrimage from illusion to reality. The influence of Simone Weil was instrumental for Murdoch developing her ideas about love, compassion, and justice. She very much borrows Weil's concept of attention and opens it out in a helpful manner. Murdoch's approach is to redefine love. For her, the Christian ideal of wishing for your neighbor what you would want yourself requires an unrealistic, superhuman virtue. Instead, she suggests love as looking. More precisely, Murdoch defines love as giving your attention to the other person. It involves switching down our fat, relentless ego and being aware of the world as it exists outside our own preoccupations. She writes, "Love is the extremely difficult realization that something other than oneself is real." So defined, loving attention is not just about doing good deeds, it is about gaining knowledge. Inevitably, it brings you closer to the appreciation of moral truth or the good. As pure egoless attention, love is simply trying to understand other people, a task that does not come to an end. Murdoch contends good is the magnetic center towards which love naturally moves. Murdoch's broadening of the concept of love can be seen as a call to try and be more empathetic towards other people, to walk a mile in their shoes so that we might understand them more, so that the challenge of loving them becomes easier. Indeed, just listening to the other can at times be a useful start to a journey of empathy. So we can celebrate Simone Weil and Iris Murdoch as two extraordinary and wonderful human beings who shared a deep spiritual belief, the belief that love, compassion, and justice are supreme. Yet each were different personalities who undertook different paths to their shared belief. Weil was deeply religious and experienced profound mystical encounters with Christianity. Murdoch was agnostic and enjoyed considerable fame as a novelist. One was saintly, the other worldly. One had a short life, the other a long life. One was celibate, the other polyamorous. Still, their writing reveals a very similar worldview about how we should all live a good, spiritual, and relevant life on earth. Their journeys to this particular philosophy of life were diverse, and each had its own complexities. Now, a skeptic might point out that every faith system in history endorses love, compassion, and justice. All encourage us to love our neighbor and to do unto others as you would have done to yourself. So, if it is self-evident, why the need for a journey? Why all this spiritual exploring and searching? Why not just get on with it? Well, genuine belief requires conviction in order to live a life informed and guided by a spiritual or religious belief. It is the lived experience of the journey, messy, painful, twisting, as it often might be, that provides this conviction and helps ensure that we live as we have come to believe. Tish Warren sees a redemptive, renewing process in such spiritual journeys that, in her words, seek the slow wisdom of the eternal. There is a parallel here, I believe, in the cathartic effect of great art, be it theatre, music, or literature. To sit through the five acts of a Eugene O'Neill play and engage with the protagonist's soul work as they stumble in search of the eternal verities is to be gifted with a deep emotional, psychological, and cognitive insight. Insights that will shape how we live our lives. To conclude, I would like to encourage all of us to embark on a little journey of our own. Let us embrace Vey and Murdoch's idea of attention and use it as a method to empathize with, to respect, and perhaps ultimately love a friend, a neighbor, a stranger, even a divine presence. Let us listen and listen more. Let us deflate our intrusive egos and give our undivided consideration to the other person. In doing this, we learn about ourselves and our shortcomings. We will learn about the other person, their anxieties, and their contributions. And if this practice of attention does not work for us the first time, let us try it again. Amen.